Hello, this is Frankie Raincoat talking to you from the land of snow and ice and wind and rain and hot, sunny, humid days, which is the east coast of the United States and especially the northeastern part of us. I want to do a book segment. And the book I'm going to talk about is an older book called The Heart of Wicca by Ellen Cannon Reed. She is no longer on the temporal plane. And this book, I believe, was published in 2000, so 11 years ago. And I think she died somewhere around 2005, maybe? I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. She died before I discovered her, unfortunately. I picked up this book about 5 or 6 years ago when I was first considering joining a local Wiccan coven. It was a teaching coven, very structured and very strict, and I did join it. And this book was recommended on the website because it described very closely what their coven, the coven that I joined, was like and what could be expected. I left that coven about a year ago, and I don't really consider myself Wiccan, and I never actually have. But at the time, it was the proper part of my path for me to follow. If I had not joined it, I would have just been sidestepping an important aspect, important part of my journey. However, I still do consider this book a very good book and full of good wisdom. She talks about what is Wicca, the tradition of it, covens and coven leadership, good, what good leadership is, what bad leadership is, what can be expected in training and study, what can be expected in an initiation. She talks about the deities, the sabbats, magic, and the Wiccan reed. Now, the Wiccan reed, the most important part in my not-so-humble opinion, goes, and it harm none, do what you will. And I talked about this in my last episode, and I looked at this book. I referenced this book and put it in the bibliography on the show notes. My attitude towards harm none, I won't say it came from this book. I already had it. But she really put in words what I had trouble articulating. And I just want to read a couple of paragraphs from late in the book, page 113. She says, after checking out several dictionaries, it would seem the consensus that hurt was causing pain and harm was causing damage. In discussions, I'd point this out and we'd get into great long debates as to which was which. What qualifies as damage? What one person thinks of as damage might seem only pain to others and vice versa. To use my favorite example, a scalpel may hurt. A burst appendix left unremoved can kill you, and that's pretty strong harm in my opinion. So that's a very good example, the example I used in the last episode, in the previous episode of This Pagan Place, was staying in a relationship so that you don't hurt your partner, but you're causing harm by not allowing them to look for someone who does love them and will be with them. I believe that this book is still in print. It's published by Samuel Weiser in York Beach, Maine, my old stomping grounds. And I recommend it for a seeker in the true sense of the word, someone who's seeking a teacher. She goes over what to look for, what you should look for in a teacher, and what a teacher may expect of you. The relationship between student and teacher is an important one in the pagan and Wiccan traditions. So she goes over how to find a teacher and how to treat a teacher and how a teacher should treat you. She talks about the sabbats, and this was another part of the book that I liked a lot. Well, one of my beefs with Wiccan is the treatment of the sabbats and basic mythology laid down, but we won't go into that now. What she does with her sabbats is she considers each one, let's see if I can remember this, she considers each one to lead into the next one. Each sabbat is a promise for the coming sabbat and a fulfillment of the promise of the last sabbat. I'll see if I can find a quick example. Well, a real obvious one, of course, is that at May Day, at Beltane, the story goes that the goddess becomes pregnant. And at the end of the Sabbath, she is pregnant. And the promise of that pregnancy is, of course, Yule, the birth of the sun god. It's not the next. There's a few Sabbaths in between, but that's what it is. She makes the Sabbaths, the rituals of the Sabbaths, relate to each other. Let me read a little bit here on page 80. Because I felt the need to have some connection, some continuity to the rituals, so I could put a rim around the 8 spokes I had, I began to work to achieve this. What I finally came up with was this. Each Sabbath made a promise and fulfilled the promise made by the previous one. Let's start with Yule. It makes the promise that the sun will return, that the days will be longer and warmer. You can't see that at Yule because the change is gradual, a few minutes a day. But by Candlemas in February, or Imbolc, you can see the difference in the days. So she approaches it by really connecting the Sabbaths to each other, not just to the seasons in which they are. And that's one of the reasons I really cherish this book, are little bits like that, that she, her wisdom comes through. And while I might not agree with her, or I might not follow her same religion, which is Wicca, and which is a little bit different than, or a part of paganism, I appreciate the wisdom for her. I'm really sorry that I discovered her so late. That is The Heart of Wicca by Ellen Cannon Reed, published by Samuel Weiser. And my copy is copyrighted in the year 2000. Highly recommend it, and would suggest anyone to pick it up.
Thrice the friended cat hath mewed.
Thrice and once the hedgepick whined.
Harpy cries, 'tis time, 'tis time.
Round about the cauldron go,
and the poison mantles flow.
Skin of toad and spike of bow,
sharpened on a needle stone.
Serpent, egg, and dancing dead effigy of Pete.
And let double, double trouble you bubble in a witch's brew.
Fillet of a fanny snake,
hit cauldron boy and bake.
Eye of newton toe of frog, lizard leg and fairy ring, round about the cauldron sing. Double, double trouble, you bubble in a witch's brew.
Double trouble, you bubble in a witch's brew.
trouble you bubble in a witch's brew.
So let's shuffle the tarot deck and we'll pull a random card from the deck. I'm going to shuffle just three times. We don't need to shuffle a million times. When you do a reading, shuffling is of course important, and I think it kind of calms the mind, gets you into a good space. So you can shuffle, you can cut, you can do all the above or none of the above. Our card today is the Page of Cups. So the Page of Cups in the Rider-Waite deck has a lot of pale blue, yellow, pink. It's sort of feminine, and the pages are feminine. Other decks are called the princesses. And court cards indicate either an aspect of you, the querent, or someone involved in the querent's life or around the question of the reading. I tend to read court cards as aspects of the person, whoever you're reading for, yourself or the other person. And the Page of Cups, pages are young and innocent. They're the inner child aspect of an adult. And cups are, of course, emotion and intuition, feelings, things like that. So I would can say that the Page of Cups could indicate a beginning, an innocence of feeling or emotion around the question, beginning of love in an innocent and childlike way. Kind of reminds me of me and my husband, although we're both in our 40s, we just got married last year for the first time, first marriage for both of us, and it's sort of silly, but we walk around town holding hands and making out in the street, and so... This is what that card reminds me of, that very young love, that the 16-year-old or 15-year-old love. It's such an intense feeling and can't keep your hands off each other and things like that. So that could be one interpretation, depending on the reader or the querent. Another interpretation is an inner search. The page is holding a golden cup and there's a little fish peeking out. In mythology, you have the talking salmon, which is an indication of wisdom, learning, and gaining wisdom, and you need to look into your heart a lot to do that, to get to that point. And so this card could also indicate that search for wisdom on an emotional and intuitional level. So the Page of Cups, it's a lovely card to have drawn, especially if you're using it as a significator. It's a very lovely card. I can't really think of any darker aspects of it. You know, it's a card of communication. This fish and the figure are looking right at each other, and you know, he or she has a content look on his face. One of the reasons I like the Rider-Waite deck a lot is because the figures are pretty androgynous. I mean, the figure on the pages are boyish, and the queens are clearly women, and that's sort of, but they, on the other hand, they're close. The male and female figures are close enough that I feel it's easy to go back and forth on them. The page could very easily be a female figure. Even the knights and like the Six of Wands, they're androgynous. They're ambiguous. Unlike the Robin Hood, the Robin Hood deck, which is a very sexy deck. The men are men and the women are women, and it's a beautiful deck. I don't own it myself. And the reason I don't own it is because I prefer to read with the Rider-Waite because the figures are androgynous. I think it's easier makes it easier for anybody to relate to any of the figures. So that's the Rider-Waite deck, and that's the Page of Cups.
The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. Aye, 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 aye.
Elements are basic building blocks of magic. Four elements. Five elements, but we're going to talk about the four basic ones. Earth, air, fire, and water. The fifth one is spirit, or the center. You'll often hear the center being called in a circle to kind of pull it all together, the hub of a circle. But we're going to talk about earth, air, fire, and water in that order. Now, each element corresponds to many things. Firstly, they correspond to one of the four directions, and secondly, they correspond to a basic tool of witchcraft. So in the north, we start in the north in earth magic. The earth resides in the north, and its tool is the pentacle, and it is often represented on the altar by a little bowl of salt. The next direction is the east, and air resides in the east. Its tool is the wand, and it's represented by incense on the altar. South is next. Its element is fire. The tool is the sword or the athame or the dagger. And it's usually often represented by a candle, specifically a red candle called the fire candle. And the last one is the west, the direction of west. Element of water resides there, and its tool is the cup. And it's represented on the altar by water. Now, most books and resources will put the sword, or the, what's called the knife, in the east with the air, and the wand, which is generally made of wood, in the south with fire. And that's how I learned it in the early days of my studies. But I had a hard time memorizing it. I was trying to memorize the direction and the element and the tool, and I could remember that water and cups were together because cups hold water. And I could remember that pentacles and earth went together because a pentacle is a flat thing and could carry the earth or the dirt. But when I got to the wand in the south with fire, I couldn't work it out. What, fire burnt up the wood, so it was put there, and he waved a sword around the air? just didn't make enough sense to me. So at the time, I was writing book reviews for a now-defunct pagan newsletter in my area, and I reviewed the book Techniques of High Magic by Francis King. Great book. He put the sword, or he put the knife in the south with fire and the wands in the air with, in the east with the air. And this made much more sense to me. After all, that way the element and the tools could work together, not destroy each other. So the fire tempers the steel of your knife, and the air will allow a living wand, a branch on a tree, to breathe and blossom. So in my work, I put wands in the east with air and the knife in the south with fire. But that's a question that each practitioner in each group will have to decide for themselves. There's a debate in the pagan community about these correspondences. There's always a debate, but consistency is probably the most important thing here. Decide what you're going to do and do it that way. Now, the elements are not, they're not here just to do your bidding, and neither are the gods for that matter. You need to figure them out. You need to get to know the elements. Look at them. Smell them. Feel them. Work with them. I mean, they're right there. The dirt is right there. The air, you're living, so you're breathing air. Your body is filled with water and salt. Fire is harder to see in our modern world, but light a candle. There it is. So you want to get to know them. Go outside and rub your hands in some dirt. Plant something. Put your feet in the lake or the ocean if you live nearby one, or a mud puddle if you don't. And there you'll have both the earth and water. Light a candle, or if you have a fireplace or a fire pit, build a fire. Listen to the fire. Look at the flames and observe how they consume the fuel, how the wood and the paper burn up and turn to ash. You can make small gifts to the elements and directions. And a good time to perform a little ritual for this is first thing in the spring, about now here in the Northeast, or the last thing in the autumn, or both. And you might go out into your yard with a handful of eggs, hard-boiled eggs, and bury an egg at each direction of the yard with a short invocation, a gift, you know, a short invocation to the element, offering your egg. Whatever you bury in your yard should be biodegradable for the most part. You don't want to put toxic things in there when you might grow vegetables later on. But anyway, you can make this ritual as simple or as elaborate as you want. You might go to the north and give the earth a precious stone if you have one, so a small stone. Stones are symbols of the earth element, very obvious one. Over in the east, sprinkle a small amount of dried herbs, especially if you grew it yourself in last year's garden. In the south, a nice offering could be a small piece of copal or frankincense. These are resin incenses, just a little piece. And in the west, pour a little honey on the ground. You know, you could do other things, play a tune or sing, put down some colored stones. Each element in each direction is associated with a specific color. And use your imagination. You know, the most important thing here is sincerity. And you don't need to stress too much over getting everything exactly right in regards to the proper correspondences or erecting a temple or anything. You can, of course, set up the entire ritual, or it can be very casual. Whatever you want to do. So you're making friends with the elements. You're gaining some understanding of them, and you're hanging out with them. You're just getting to know each other. Another aspect of working with elements in magic are the elementals. The elementals were invented by Paracelsus in the 1500s. And I guess invented is a strong word. Some people might say he discovered them, that they were always there and that they're real. They're not part of the temporal plane, which is the part of the world where we are. We are on the temporal plane. They're sometimes called elementaries, and they're spirits of the element and made up entirely of that element. There's nothing else to the elemental except its element. It's like the ultimate one-track mind. So the gnomes, are the elementals of Earth. They live in the north with Earth. And they are Earth. They're nothing but Earth. Earth, Earth, Earth. Sylphs are air. They're nothing but air. Undines are water, and salamanders are fire. My feeling is that the elementals are names of the images of the spirits of each element. So we have the element, that each element has a spirit to it, and we have made, humans have made images for each of these spirits of the element and named them gnomes, sylphs, salamanders, and undines. The theosophists use the term deva to indicate the spirits living in nature, and something like the elemental. You'll often hear pagans and witches calling to or speaking of the deva of this place, or the deva of a plant, the deva of this tree, to encourage the garden or the tree or other natural areas to flourish. You could also simply call the plant by its name, you know, rosebush, grow and flourish where I've planted you, compost, help her out. Elementals are usually found in ceremonial magic as opposed to earth magic. They're part of the drama of ritual. And my feeling is that they're a made-up part, made up for the drama of ritual. And there's nothing wrong with that, because drama, ritual is drama, that's what it is. So when you make your decisions, you know, when you decide what you want to do, meditate on the element and see what you get. You might get an elemental. The thing to remember about all this is that paganism is all about nature. And nature is made up of these four elements, or five if you want to include the center and spirit, although I feel like that's a little bit different than nature. And nature is a wonder. It's beautiful and ugly, gracious and dangerous, generous and vicious, and complex. So, you know, get out there and experience nature and experience the elements, and then when you go to do your magic, you'll probably be far more successful.
End of the day, at the end of the harvest, with the sun going down. End of the road, with the last one behind us, and the last sheaf is bound. Yet over and over, before sleep takes my eyes, over and over, I see the flash of the scythe coming down. Light up a candle to see in the old way, with the sun going down. Don't quite understand how it burns up a whole day without making a sound. But in some flinch of your shoulder, some look in your eye, I see the fear of disorder, the fear of the scythe coming down. Sun going down, it cuts through the days and the change in our own life, till the last comes around. Well, everything changes, everything dies, in a teary reflection, I see the flash of the sight.